Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 354. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined, as I usually am, by Neil Ronahan.
Hello.
Hello. And joining us, in addition to the two of us, also as well as today, is Alex DeFritis.
Howdy!
I'm not redoing that. It's perfect. Yes, we've been playing a bunch of games. So we've got games. We've got a little bit of like news. We've got some relevant games. This might be one of the more relevant episodes we've done in a while.
We're going to be talking about games that have come out within the past week. I guess there's like a week range of when these games came out. However, like half of them pretty much came out years ago.
Half.
Yeah.
But some of them are on Nintendo consoles or were at one point. So it's trending positive for the podcast, honestly. There's only one Xbox exclusive on this list, so we're doing great. Yeah, but first, we have some listener mail. Best friend of the show, Chariot Goblin, wrote in and says, "Hey, Connectivity, I just realized that we had the release of Pyra and Mithra and Kazuya." Real quick, it was Sephiroth and Kazuya. Pyra and Mithra aren't out yet, but continuing. Earlier this month, as we approach the end of the Smash line, what do you think is the future of Amiibo? Will any of Nintendo's 2023 games support Amiibo? Also, how would you rate each of the Star Fox Amiibo? Thanks, and keep up the good work. Well, I can answer one of these questions, because Fire Emblem does indeed support Amiibo. So, there is a 2023 Nintendo game that supports it.
And Zelda definitely will.
Yeah, they haven't said anything about that yet.
They have not. Well, so there's the stuff with Amiibo where they usually have like the FCC filing with them or something when they do productions of them. I think there was something going around that there's Zelda Amiibo that will be like are being reprinted or remolded, reshaped.
Reborn, restocked.
But I think I don't know if there will be new Zelda Amiibo, but I believe that you'll be able to find some of the ones that have been very hard to find.
I mean, they made 40 different Breath of the Wild Amiibo, so...
Yeah, I don't think it is a 100% safe bet that there will be Zelda Amiibo for Tears of the Kingdom, but like I'd say like 95% I'd expect Amiibo.
I hope there's an even bigger Guardian Amiibo.
That would be cool. That's the new enemy. It's just going to be a Guardian, but way bigger.
But bigger.
I want to be able to use my Max Hearts Wolf Link Amiibo again.
Ooh, that was cool. I forget you could do that.
It was neat, but like not that useful.
Yeah,
it was like really cool. It was honestly, yeah, I was going to say when you like first start that game and you're like really under equipped, it's a pretty hard game. So having that, I think I also used it a little bit in Master Quest mode.
It is something like that wolf becomes useless like once you're like 5-10 hours into the game.
I would occasionally use him just for the sake of friendship. Because you don't get a companion character in that game, so you need a lonely friend. You need a Navi or a Midna or a Fee or something.
Do you think we'll have a companion character in Tears of the Kingdom?
Well, it ain't Zelda. Yeah. She fell down a hole. We saw the trailer.
Will your glowing hand talk to you?
I hope not.
Yeah, all the dialogue will be exactly like Forspoken.
Oh, God.
Link's going to talk exactly like the main character from Forspoken the entire game.
I can move things with my mind. I'm fighting jacked up beasts.
He's going to say freaking a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
I don't want to necessarily dunk on Forspoken, but at the same time, like that dialogue is very funny. And also, apparently, the game is maybe mediocre at best. It's probably getting more hate than it deserves, but it definitely like seems like it's not hitting the mark.
It looks like it's a very fun world to run and jump around in, and I would probably enjoy it a reasonable amount if I played it. But every clip of that game that I've seen that has any spoken dialogue from any character in it is just hilarious. But I'll probably never play it because I don't have a PS5 and my PC probably doesn't meet the minimum system specs of that game.
I just understand why that game gets so much hate, but High on Life was super popular.
See, the thing is, I think High on Life also got... I had this thought the other day.
Might be a better game.
Well, speaking as someone who has finished High on Life, I haven't played Forspoken, but I can confirm that High on Life is not very good.
Okay. I mean, I also, the more that I heard about High on Life, I just became passionately disinterested in that game. But I did hear people saying that, like, the Justin Roiland, which also Seems like he's a deviant.
Yeah.
High on Life. Good thing it didn't get delayed to 2023.
Yeah.
But like I recall hearing from a lot of people that like, oh, like his stupid dialogue's a little much, but I'm having a good time. I looked at that game and looked at some reviews and was like, I probably wouldn't have a good time. It moved on with my life.
So I'm seeing this both with High on Life and I'm seeing it with Forspoken, is people are realizing that they're capable of enjoying a game that's rated 7 out of 10. And it's your
days to eat, man.
I don't want to say that I'm some sort of prophet, but like, yeah, 7 out of 10 games can be fine. Like that's like I played all the way through High on Life. It was reasonably enjoyable most of the time that I was playing it. I deleted it as soon as the credits rolled, and I'm never going to touch it again. But like, I didn't hate playing it. And I suspect that's probably where Forspoken is you, like, you can play through that and yeah. have a reasonably good time, and then you'll be done and you'll move on with your life. And I encourage people to play video games that are like that. Because like,
that was Harvestella.
Yeah, exactly.
Harvestella is a hell of a 7.5.
Yeah.
It was kind of, as I played that game, I was like, oh, maybe this is like an 8 or a 9. And the more I played it, I'm like, no, this is just the John Raritan 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's my version of that.
I'm glad that's my legacy.
Every Warriors game is a fantastic 7 out of 10.
Listen, Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity is a 9.5 out of 10, with the 0.5 being the frame rate.
I think I gave it an 8.5. Yeah. But I'm not that big into Fire Emblem, but Three Hopes is great. Like, I did not personally review that game, but like minimum 8.
Nintendo Fire. Well, I didn't like the first Fire Emblem Warriors. I thought was bad, yeah. but every other Nintendo Warriors game, I think has been, and I think the sales would agree, I think those have been the strongest Warriors games.
Even like Dragon Quest Heroes, that was, although Dragon Quest Heroes, I think I would put that in the first Fire Emblem Warriors in that. It's a damn good 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that one, it was okay. Anyway, so the, amiibos, huh?
Yeah, the future of amiibo. I do, like, I mean, we are clearly past the salad days of amiibo, but I think we're gonna, like, at least for the rest of Switch, we'll see the token support, like, in Fire Emblem and Xenoblade, and probably Zelda. If there is, I would assume there's a Mario game the year that they're releasing a giant movie about it. That game will probably use amiibo, but it'll eternally be in this kind of tucked away corner of stuff. Not necessarily front and center.
Well, there are very few games right now that they might use amiibo, but they don't seem to care what amiibo it is most of the time. Like Xenoblade 3 uses amiibos, but the only one that it cares about is the Shulk one. Fire Emblem uses amiibos, but it only cares if they're the Fire Emblem ones. Like,
yeah, and you can use any other amiibo as well in Fire Emblem.
Yeah, they just give you like random stuff. It's not like a
I mean, that was always the good thing with Breath of the Wild as well, and I assume if Tears of the Kingdom has amiibo support, which I assume it will, it'll be similar, where it was like, you get random stuff. If you have specific Zelda amiibo, you have a better chance of getting better stuff.
Yeah,
like I think that'll keep on happening, and I think there's a chance it might even carry over until Nintendo's next system, because they're gonna finish up the Smash Brothers amiibo. We're still waiting for Pyra and Mithra. And Sora is to be confirmed, which I have a feeling if that Sora amiibo is going to happen, we will hear about it probably within the next 6 months, because I would imagine it'll probably be some sort of direct announcement or maybe just like, you know, random tweet at some point. I don't know. And we did get new amiibo for Splatoon 3. Were there any other new ones last year? I don't think so. I mean, outside of the Smash Brothers.
Yeah, I was going to say the Minecraft Steve and Alex, I think, were last year. Yeah, there were probably more that I don't remember. I stopped paying attention to them.
The Sephiroth one looks great. I saw it at Target and I almost got it.
Yeah.
But I realized, I'm like, I don't really need this. It's like a Fire Emblem one. Like, if they wound up releasing like a Leer for an Engage or something like that, like, they probably would have gotten it, because with like that one, I know that Nintendo is going to keep on making Fire Emblem games. Mm-hmm. So like that specific amiibo will be a cool looking figure and also a useful addition to future Nintendo games. I assume that Sephiroth is just going to be an amiibo-ass amiibo, because Square will, I mean, although watch like Theater Rhythm have like, if you have the Sephiroth amiibo, You get a free song, in which case then I will buy one on eBay right away if I can't find one at stores.
Alex, are you still buying Amiibos?
Well, I had sworn off Amiibo back when they were putting out the Zelda ones, and I just couldn't keep up with them. And then Fire Emblem Engage comes out, and I'm like, these Fire Emblem Amiibo are pretty cool. So I saw that Byleth, Female Corrin, Marth, and I got a Roy like imported for like $20. And then all the other ones I got at like retail price. I'm like, I might as well get them now while I can.
Yeah.
Because I know that the prices are just going to skyrocket afterwards. So yeah, this game has done a number on me. And now I'm the scum of the earth looking for Amiibo deals.
Yep.
Dirt
bag. That's probably the cool thing for Nintendo is they should print more. Like if they can just sell every Fire Emblem Amiibo to people who buy Engage. Yeah, I think they
did a restock for Marth.
Yeah, they did do a restock for some of them.
Okay.
Did they ever come out with, because this is how little I've kept up with them. Did they ever come out with Femme Byleth?
Yes. That was very recent. I think they restocked that.
I was going to get Byleth, but Femme Byleth is my Byleth.
Sorry, Corrin is who I was thinking of. Femme Byleth has not come out.
Okay, yeah. I'll probably get Femme Byleth.
I'm not even sure if they announced Femme Byleth.
If they ever release it, that's what I'll probably get.
They should release the Fire Emblem games in two versions like Pokemon, but the only difference is femme and male pro tags.
I mean, I don't want a Fate situation again.
It hasn't really been purposeful other than, I mean, the reason why I did Femme Byleth was because the original voice actor for male Byleth was a bad person. I forget exactly what he did, but I just remember reading and being like, yeah, I'll do the female one. have a better human
being voice. They changed the voice actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like after the game came out? Or
yes.
The allegations of everything happened like a month or two before the game came out, I think. So it was kind of like the point of no return. They launched it with that guy doing the voice, but did they patch it?
They did. If you have a 1.0 release, you have a different voice actor for Male Byleth.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I mean, it's the kind of thing like I don't remember what the previous voice actor did that was bad, but clearly it was bad enough. Nintendo just totally excised him from the game. But I think with Fire, like I've been doing the female protagonists because I did female Corrin as well. I did do male Robin.
Which Allier did you do?
I'm doing female Allier.
Okay.
I think the goofy hair fits the female character better than the male character.
Really? I thought the male character looked slightly less stupid, so I went male.
Honestly, they both look dumb.
Yeah, it's you're also, damned if you do.
I also remember Matt told me that the female voice actress is very, very good. That was also a deciding factor in it.
I will say, and we're getting ahead of ourselves because we'll talk about Fire Emblem more later, but I will say that if you use male Allier, then you and the prince of like the first continent
I forget his name.
Yeah. There is
Prince of Farine or whatever.
The sexual tension between him and male Allier is palpable the entire like my wife was watching me play and she
I was thinking if they like is that rewritten, but clearly it is not.
Oh, it's like my wife was watching me play it and she's like, these guys just need to fuck already and get it over with.
Because I kind of felt that with the female and that Prince of Farine.
Yeah. He's definitely gay. He just seems gay.
Well, male Allier is actually like the voice actor is in real life married to the voice actor for Louis.
That's funny.
So yeah,
that fits.
It fits. So I just felt it.
So other Amiibo stuff. As far as 2023 games, I mean, Fire Emblem does. I mean, we don't really have a lot of other 2023 games that we know about. Kirby,
I'll bet Kirby will.
Kirby probably will. That might have even been confirmed. I haven't paid too close attention. I know they've done some news drops since the direct last year, and I would bet money that Zelda will support Amiibo. And I assume there will be games. It's a certain series that already have a backlog of Amiibo. If they come out, they are probably going to reward people who have Amiibo in that series.
Hold on, I forget. Did Forgotten Land support Amiibo?
Yes, I think so.
And how?
I feel my heart says it did, but I can't tell you what they did.
I think it was something not I think it like gave you bonus items or something.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like I might have done it a little bit and was like, this doesn't really seem worthwhile. Oh,
it's like 30 star coins.
Yeah.
And a health boost.
Cause I mean, I like Xenoblade and Three Hopes before it. I would just whatever amiibo were on hand, and I let my kids play with the amiibo like a deviant. So they usually, I could just like go to their playroom. And I also have some decorated in my office. It'll just be like, oh, I'm playing Xenoblade. Like, let me go to the amiibo screen, just grab the ones that are right here, scan them in, hopefully get some class points.
I've still never used an amiibo in Xenoblade.
It just, I mean, it gives you like random items and stuff. It's just a nice thing that like if you're it like reduces grinding.
Because getting leveled up in that game is such a difficult task.
I will say the class point stuff is very clutch, because that's especially fair, yeah. When you get leveled up, that becomes a problem. But it's like a random draw, whether you just get like a random batch of items that you would find in the wild already, or you get the class points, because there's class points and then there's succession points. And you can get both of those from amiibo.
Have you done any of the Nappon Arcsage like battle scenario things that were in the DLC?
The one where you have to go to the portal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like the first wave, but where I was in the game, I didn't have all of it unlocked. I did a mess of them.
Because I was gonna say you can trade in the things you get from him to get class points.
Yeah.
To just sort of grind those out. It's really nice if you're in the post game and don't have everything leveled up yet.
Yeah. I'll have to keep that in mind, because I did that when that DLC first dropped, and then put down Xenoblade for a while and picked it back up, and then got interrupted by a game we'll talk about later. Actually, two games that we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Star Fox Amiibo. Rate them, John.
Going from worst to best, Fox, Falco, Wolf.
I never got the Wolf Amiibo.
Wolf essentially looks the best. Like, all of the Amiibos kind of got better as they went. Like, the early Amiibos look a little doofy. Fox, I think, looks pretty good for being an early amiibo, but like Wolf definitely, he like all the early ones were kind of like small and flimsy.
Yeah, or like they had the P-Rod.
Yeah, for Link. Like weirdly supported.
Fox has a pedestal, right?
Fox and Falco both do, if I remember right. I suppose I could turn my head slightly and see.
Yeah, no, I'm literally looking behind me because I have them up in my office.
Falco's pedestal isn't as bad because he's kind of like low to the ground, but they both have him. And then, but yeah, Wolf's just kind of like standing there. And that's a really good design for Wolf.
I am bummed out because there was that, I think Miyamoto like openly talked about that they were looking into doing some kind of transforming Arwing amiibo for Zero. Yep. Business wise, they made a very good decision.
Would have saved Star Fox Zero. That was every review I read was like, this needs an amiibo for the Arwing.
But actually, I feel like the best amiibo is the Arwing that came with Starlink.
Yeah, that's, and you'll notice they made that huge, because I do remember them talking about the transforming Arwing, and I think it was Nintendo made the comment about just like too many small pieces.
Yeah.
It is disappointing they never did the rest of the team, because like the only Star Fox amiibos have been Smash Bros. They've never had their own amiibo set. So
yeah, we can hope someday.
Yeah.
I need a Peppy amiibo.
I feel like we're more likely to see Peppy and Slippy be playable characters in Smash and get amiibo that way than getting amiibo from a Star Fox game.
So here's the stupid thing, is that like as far as modern Star Fox stuff goes, they've had so you have amiibo, you have the Jack specific toys, and you have, I think they're still Jack specific, but the plushies. And the action figures are the only time they've done Slippy.
Yep.
Like the amiibo just have Fox and Falco, the plushies just have Fox, Falco, and Peppy, and they've only managed to get to Slippy once before everybody realized that nobody's buying the Star Fox stuff.
I think Berube still has like a Peppy plush for me. We haven't seen each other since the pandemic started, despite the fact that we like live like less than an hour away from each other. But like, it's the kind of stuff where it'll be like, oh, I found this, I gotta pick it up. And like, I have a couple things for him too. I gotta hang out with him. Like, I legitimately have been accruing things to give him for 3 years now.
I think one of my Star Fox plushies is from him. I don't remember which one it was. But yeah, it was literally like he called me and was like, I'm at Toys R Us. Okay. But yeah, so that's amiibos. Now we're gonna go on to some games we've been playing. Neil has been playing what I believe was NWR's Game of the Year in like 2016.
I was going to say 15.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah. I mean, 2016 was not a great year. I mean, no disrespect to the game, but that's why it was able to win.
Yes, it was a quiet year.
Yeah.
I think mostly 3DS games on that list from what I remember.
Yep.
Neil, what have you been playing?
Pocket Card Jockey Ride On, which is the Apple Arcade release. It came out January 20th, was announced like it was a great, I think it was like New Year's Day or yeah. something like that, like very early on, where it was just that, like, out of nowhere. It was like, guess what? There's a new Pocket Card Jockey coming out in 2 weeks. So I dusted off the old iPad, got back into Apple Arcade, and have been playing some solitaire horse racing. And what's really funny about this is that this is just a 3DS game.
Yeah,
I don't mean any disrespect by that, because the 3DS game is our, I believe, our 2016 game of the year and legitimately one of my favorite 3DS games. But it's funny how much, and like even openly, there's been some interviews with the director who also did Little Town Hero on Switch, which is a game that everybody hated except for me. I love that game. I think that game rules. I also understand why people don't like it, because it's weird. But Pocket Card Jockey is a game that the director of it was like sad that it never found a bigger home, because it came out later in 3DS's life. It was download only. And I don't think it necessarily like failed, but like it did not break through.
Yeah.
And they apparently looked to bringing it to mobile. And I think there was a free to play mobile version that only came out in Japan, but they really couldn't find a way to monetize it. And then I think they cite that Apple Arcade has been doing very well in Japan as of late. So that's when, I don't know, like who necessarily, like how the connection went, but then Game Freak and Apple started talking about the potential of doing Pocket Card Jockey and Apple Arcade, because it seemed like a good fit. And now here we are. The changes that they did make to the game is there's some tweaks to the overall gameplay. I thought about booting up the 3DS version before I played the iPad version, but I wound up not having time to do that. But then it came out and I was like, I'm not going to waste my time playing this old busted version. I'm going to play the new one. But they tweaked some things with like how stamina and energy worked. And also in the original game, you would have like a top-down view of the horses racing. In this one, it has a more like active 3D view using that Apple Arcade money.
Yeah.
It's still a more powerful platform. Yeah, yeah.
We need a PS5 and Series X release to really harness the potential of Pocket Card Jockey.
But it's still an excellent game. And it's one of those games that I think does a good job of making even failure fun. Because you're going to lose a lot. Like, you're going to have horses lose in big races and then they have to retire. That is going to happen constantly. But it's still just a blast to try to, like, have that struggle of trying to get the horse that can win all the races, of trying to like figure out how to, you know, harness your solitaire playing skills along with, you know, carving out the right path on the track, using items effectively, doing that home stretch run the right way. It just got a lot of like fiddly nuance that is fun and repetition. I hope it comes to Switch eventually. And it seems like that's probably going to happen at some point. I was reading some of the interviews that the director of the game gave when it hit last week, and he basically said like they're focused on like doing some updates to the Apple Arcade version, and then after that, like they'll kind of see what the future holds. But it seems like dude wants this game to be played by as many people possible, and it seems like going from Apple Arcade to Switch is a relatively good pipeline. I'll be curious if it does come to platforms beyond Switch, though.
Switch does seem to be usually the first stop after Apple Arcade. I assume it's just a very comparable. Yeah. I mean, I got like Switch is a mobile tablet from 2014, so it kind of makes sense.
But did either of you guys play the 3DS version?
I played a little bit of it back when it came out. I remember very little. I remember thinking it was neat. And therefore not getting in the way of it winning Game of the Year.
Yeah, yeah.
I played like 30 minutes of it, and I don't think I really got it.
It took me a while to remember how to play it. Like, it is, because it does kind of throw you in there, which I think is the right way to do that game, because I feel like a laborious tutorial would just get boring. But it does have a good feedback loop that, like, if you lose a race, it'll be like, oh, you ran out of energy. This is how you make sure that you don't lose all your energy. And then there is like an item shop where you can buy items that will help you. Like if, for example, you just suck at playing solitaire, there's ways that you can make solitaire playing easier. If you're bad at some of the like the strategy of where your horse is on the track, you can buy items that will, you know, make up for that.
So weirdly, I have been corrected by the Wikipedia article on Pocket Card Jockey about my own website. We did not give it Game of the Year. It was ranked as the fifth best, which is okay. Cited in the Wiki. So the Wikipedia article specifically quotes Neil.
You're damn right it does.
And then goes on to talk about our end of the year awards, which is probably the only time anyone anywhere has paid attention to our end of the year awards. But yeah, I noticed that so it came out in Japan in 2014. No, it came out in Japan in 2013. And then the mobile version came out in 2014. And then the English version came out in 2016. So I didn't realize that it was mobile in Japan and already shut down by the time that we got the English localization.
So I bought a Japanese 3DS when Smash Brothers came out, because it came out on 3DS like a month earlier. And that was like fall 2014. One of the first things that I did with my 3DS, because I got it a little bit before Smash Brothers came out, was download the demo for Pocket Card Jockey. And I had no idea what in the hell was happening, but I was very charmed by the visuals and the presentation. So my horses kept on losing, but I was like, I'm just gonna play a little more solitaire. But I forgot that there was a 3-year gap between the Japanese release and the 3DS release.
Yeah, and it seems clear
the American release.
The Wikipedia page also says that Ronahan felt it had been unlikely to come out of Japan.
Apparently, that's what I said.
Yeah. I'm learning a lot about you from this Wikipedia article.
I called it system shockingly deep, though they can say he, that's my pronoun. Though he notes that it's convoluted and long tutorials prevented it from being ranked more highly.
I like that they had to dig into our Game of the Year awards just to get enough stuff to put in the reception for Pocket Card Jockey.
They put in a lot. There's a Games Radar, Nintendo Life Verge, but I'm like very happy that I'm up there.
Yeah,
we do not have the blue text, though.
Yes, Alex, we do not have the blue text on our name because we're not notable. Yep. Unlike Destructoid, Game Informer, Nintendo Life, and US Gamer.
We need to increase our notability.
I think the key is that we have to sell copies of these video games on our website. That would make us good, honest journalists like the rest of those websites.
I think we have a store tab, right?
We do. Yeah, the problem is it doesn't sell the video games we're reviewing. What we need to do is offer you like a 10% discount if you buy the game directly through our review page.
I will
say,
that
seems earnest.
Most of these, like for Nintendo Life and US Gamer, clicking on their links, it just takes you to the Gamer Network.
Yeah, their parent company.
So all we need to do is get bought out. So if in the bid to get Nintendo Report, a blue link on Wikipedia, I'm accepting offers.
Now, I will say, I think with the new way that Twitter works, I think we're eligible for a yellow checkmark.
Yeah, I guess we should mess around with that. Yeah,
we should look into that. Get kind of verified. Or we'll just buy Twitter blue.
No.
Nobody will check. They'll just think these guys look authoritative, what with their checkmark and such. Yes.
Yeah, Pocket Card Jockey is great. Everybody should play it if they have an iOS device and Apple Arcade. And if you have an iOS device and you don't have Apple Arcade, what's wrong with you?
Do you technically have like a month left to get it on 3DS, or is that shop dead yet?
I think we have another month.
Okay, there you go. You have to like get credit through the Switch, but you can do it.
I did not know that Seren had this dark path for me, but it came up when I was on a stream with her. That she was just like, yeah, I was thinking of roping you into an Apple Arcade podcast where we just talk about all the good games that are on Apple Arcade that no one's playing.
Yeah.
It sounds like a good idea. There's a lot of, like, because I was not subscribed for, I don't know, like a year or so. But booting back up, like, a lot of good things have been added to it. I forgot how many good games were initially there, even though that Choo Choo Rocket game is lost to the world right now, which sucks. But there are, I get it, concerns about the sustainability and preservation of these games. That is not great, but it's cool that they occasionally give like creators like Hironobu Sakaguchi a shitload of money to just make some like fever dream of an RPG that probably shouldn't be made anymore.
Yeah, I have a weirdly high impression of Apple Arcade, and I've never used it. I've just played a bunch of ports of those games to Switch, and they've all been great. And so yeah. I just assume that they're all like that.
I don't know if they are all there, but I know a lot of old like IGN Nintendo guys were at Apple, and I think like the ones I think Cass Messina might have left before Arcade launched, but I know those folks, I think, were some of the tastemakers that helped put together that excellent lineup of Apple yeah. Arcade games.
I, in our very topical podcast, binged through a bunch of Hi-Fi Rush after work today, which was a shadow drop at the Xbox and Bethesda developer underscore direct. How Nintendo didn't manage to copyright directs, I'll never know, but they didn't. So everything's a direct now. But yeah, this was like the one surprise. Like, they had announced for that direct four games they were going to talk about. And then this was their surprise fifth game that we didn't know about until today. And then it shadow dropped, which is awesome. But it's not like a rhythm game, but it's kind of a rhythm game. It's a platformer slash brawler where you attack on the rhythm. But not to, like, it's not like you have to push the button on the rhythm to attack. When you push the button, it'll queue up an attack that won't happen until the beat gets there. And then attacking on the beat will get you, like, bonus damage. And it'll also affect, like, your jumping and your dodging. And if you do everything on the beat, then you get bonuses and you get scored better and all that. But the game is by, is it Tango Softworks? Is that the right?
Tango Gameworks.
Gameworks, that's the one.
I do like how they lean into the fact that it's from the studio who made The Evil Within, and it's something completely different than that.
The Evil Within, Evil Within 2, and Ghostwire Tokyo, which when it came out that they were going to be at this thing, I was like, oh, Ghostwire Tokyo has been out for about a year. Its exclusivity with PlayStation is probably up. I'll bet that's coming to Xbox. And then this came up, which, if you haven't seen it, looks like a, I guess, maybe it a little like... Into Sunset the Spider-Verse or something. Yeah, like into, yeah.
Like Jet Set Radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, in that wheelhouse. Yeah.
Borderlands-y,
It's cel-shaded, but its production values for like cutscenes and animation are super high, and it just looks incredible. And like nothing these guys have done before. But it's Shinji Mikami is the executive producer on it because it's his company.
Yeah.
Famous for some Resident Evil and a bunch of games that don't look like this. It's awesome, and I just got to the first boss and then had to quit to come do this podcast, but so far just the vibes and the characters are funny and the combat is really fun, and getting used to like you have a light attack that takes one beat and then your heavy attack takes two beats, and so if you want to combo them effectively, you have to be aware of like how many beats you're waiting between attacks to do your next one based on what kind of attack you're doing. And it's wonderful. It also has a licensed soundtrack, so there's some original music in it, but then a lot of licensed songs, which is just kind of fun. Yeah, it probably also means that it'll get delisted in like 5 years when they lose the rights to all the music, or streamer mode will just become default, and that's what you have to use to play it. But yeah, and I think we were talking before the show, it sounds like it's on Game Pass, but it's only like $30 to buy it. I don't expect it's very long, so $30 sounds about right. But yeah, this was an awesome surprise from this direct that I wasn't expecting.
There was another surprise at that direct. Before it, Nintendo being like, oh, you're going to use direct now, huh?
Oh, yeah.
So GoldenEye 64 is coming out on Nintendo Switch Online by the time you listen to this on January 27th. It's also coming out on Xbox. Although the thing with, so can you buy GoldenEye on Xbox?
I was talking to some people on Twitter about this. And so it's available through Game Pass. It's also, you get it if you own Rare Replay, but it may only be if you own a digital copy of Rare Replay. And it's not totally clear if it's like an update for Rare Replay or if it's like a separate application that you just gain access to by owning Rare Replay. It's not clear if you can just buy it. I would be amazed if you couldn't. I also can't really hold it against them if they do want to make it just essentially part of their service, because like that's what Nintendo's doing. So yeah, it's in a weird place where I'm not really sure exactly what its distribution is going to look at, but I'll definitely check it out on Friday to see. I guess I don't know how to trick my Xbox into thinking I don't have Game Pass so that I can see if it'll work with a physical copy of Rare Replay, but we'll find out, I suppose.
Yeah, looking at it, I'm looking at the press release for Xbox. Xbox One and Series X and S as part of Game Pass. Additionally, players who own a digital copy of Rare Replay will be able to download and enjoy the game for free of charge. So yeah, doesn't look like it's being sold at all, which is probably, I mean, that's probably part of the agreement in a way.
Or, I mean, is that what it says? Or is it just saying that here are the two ways you can get it for free?
I mean, I'm not studying Xbox press releases, but I would think if they wanted to emphasize that you could buy the game, they would probably give a price for it.
Unless they just assume that's, yeah, I guess the price thing. I was going to say, unless that's just assumed.
The press release for Hi-Fi Rush.
Because you can buy Hi-Fi Rush separately.
Yeah.
Even on Xbox.
Or I guess it's not, it's whatever their press release, it's not, I don't know if it's necessarily a press release thing as it is what. But just looking at the boilerplate. We'll find out on Friday, maybe, because the way they kind of point out Hi-Fi Rush, although because it is available now, like right below it, you can go buy it in the store, but it says it's available today for Xbox Series XS and Windows PC. The game available download. Oh, this is what it verbatim, what it says on the news.xbox.com website. The game available download with an Xbox Game Pass or PC Game Pass membership.
Okay, so yeah, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm glad this is actually finally coming out. It's, you know, I had been waiting since that September Direct to see if I should renew my Nintendo subscription since they didn't offer me anything else. So it's, you know, nice to finally have this and not just like 20 Mario Party games. But I do think it's interesting. The NSO version supports widescreen, which I believe the original N64 version also had widescreen support, because that was just what Rare did because they were awesome people. So it's cool that's getting used. It will be interesting to see. I'm assuming the emulator can properly handle that and just won't give you bars on the side of the screen. It may also mean that your little player icon overlaps with the game, which might be weird. Or, in the most Nintendo way possible, it could totally give you a letterboxed image in the middle of those 4x3 bars. So,
no,
you know, I'm not trusting anything. The Xbox version does point out that it has alternate control options, which I'm assuming the Nintendo version will not.
Yeah.
Which might, we'll see, that might make that the version that I play over the Switch version, just because N64 Rare first-person shooter controls have aged like milk. So.
It is also the kind of thing where the fact that there's no online play for Xbox sucks.
Yeah, but there isn't actually. I mean, like, it's not like there's lobbies for the Switch.
I mean, but I can still play it online.
You can. Yes, if you gather a group of people. Online. Yeah, if you gather a group of people, then you can play it online in so much as you can play any NSO game online.
There's a chance I might mess around in single player on Xbox, but I only have one Xbox controller, so the multiplayer part of it is completely out, whereas I have enough Switch controllers to drown in.
Yeah, I kept my Xbox One controller. Well, I kept my Xbox One, but because that controller is compatible, it's like the first system I've owned in a while where I'm like, I have two controllers for this. Let's play co-op games.
Yeah, I gave my Xbox One to my nephew. So I was like, I could keep this for me, but that'd be mean. He needs to play Fortnite on something, I guess.
Alex, as a young man, do you have any affinity for GoldenEye?
I remember watching my older brother play it with a group of friends. It's like a vague memory.
Yeah.
And you're just like single tearing, looking through the window.
Yeah.
Cold outside.
Yeah, Alex was outside, of course. They wouldn't let Alex in the house as a child.
They kicked me out of the room.
No, slappers only, kid.
They did the same thing with Crash Team Racing.
I'm looking forward to playing this game for 20 minutes on Friday and never playing it again.
It's the take I saw online was I look forward to booting this up for a few minutes and then playing Perfect Dark instead.
I have a lot of fond memories with the single player, so I'll probably mess around with that and then try to, like, if I hang out with friends, just be like, guys, look at this, and we will boot it up and probably load into a game and be like, and we're done. That was great.
You guys should stream some online multiplayer. I'm sure that'll hold up really well. I guess you've been doing that for Mario Party, right?
Yeah, we did that with Mario Party. We've also done a sampler of different N64 games.
Have those largely held up well for online multiplayer for you guys?
It's fine, but there's like audio glitching that sounds like a nightmare. It happens every now and then, but the chat really loves it. Honestly, they get hyped for the nightmare sounds that the audio creates.
That's
so
good.
It's good content.
I just remember when I overextended myself by doing that virtual PAX panel. I forget what, Super Nintendo Market Sweep or whatever I came up with.
Oh, yeah.
Where we used the NSO games as like the challenge. And I think it was because it was so convoluted how we did it. But it was also probably the only way to make that work in that setting. But it was a fucking nightmare.
Was that one of like the a 2020 PAX panel? Why was that digital?
Because that was like PAX West time in 2020 after PAX East. PAX West is usually around Labor Day. So, and I thought that would be a fun idea to do a virtual panel. And I was an idiot because that was way too much work.
Those were the ones that I was supposed to help with. And then I didn't have power for weeks.
Yeah, because like,
So you were by yourself.
Yeah. You know what? They existed.
Yep. they did happen.
Yep.
Okay, well let's go on to the real game that we've probably been playing the most of, maybe, which is Fire Emblem Engage, which all three of us bought. I assume I was kind of not sure if I would, but Matt's review sold me.
It's a good review.
You guys, I assume, were a bit more confident in buying this.
Oh, even if it was awful, I was gonna buy it.
It was Matt that sold me.
Okay.
I just made up my mind way earlier than you.
Alex, I'm assuming you're farther than me. What chapter are you on?
I'm on chapter 13. I haven't started that chapter, but I'm 25 hours in.
Okay. Yeah, I'm at the start of chapter 8.
Yeah, I'm in chapter 5. So I'm still pretty early.
So we won't talk about the chapter where everyone dies, is survived by all of their future babies.
That is a game in the series, though.
Yeah, I mean, it is,
I do like some of the knocks on this game were the story, but like, I think it's fine.
I'm fairly engaged.
It honestly reminds me a lot of the GPA games.
Sure.
It reminds me mostly of Awakening.
And
that's a decent story.
It has some nice, it was funny, like within the first couple hours of this game, I felt like I had done more battles than I had in my entire attempt to play through Three Houses.
Yeah.
Which was great.
It sips along.
Yeah. And I like that, like in the story, like I'm moving through the world. Like I'm on an adventure. I'm not just sort of like in this hub, occasionally venturing out into the woods. And obviously Three Houses gets there. But like as far as like the initial like onboarding process, like Engage just kind of immediately is an adventure in a way that like Three Houses, the start of that game, is so slow. It also helps that like it honestly looks pretty nice, though I do think it's funny, like this game is terrified of showing you real-time cutscenes without cheating a lot. And I think Three Houses did this too, where like when you're in the cutscenes where it's just people talking to each other, like they're just in a skybox that's been painted to look like the room they're in.
Right. Everything behind them is a 2D image.
Right. It's just a texture of the area that they're in, which in a lot of instances means that the background is a lower resolution than the characters are. But it means that those characters sure do render at a nice high resolution. It's just funny because then you cut to the battle and it's like, okay, this is the environment that you just textured on. And the game clearly renders it fine. Like,
yes.
Why did you fake this? It seems okay.
We and got more polygons for the faces.
Yeah. Even the the more like mocap sequences that are still in engine are rendered from in engine and then poorly compressed. And then they're like the nice offline pre-rendered cutscenes as well. But outside of those talking heads, there are no real-time cutscenes in this game. And the talking head ones have pre-rendered backgrounds. They are terrified to let you see what this engine could do with a cutscene if given the chance. And I think that's very funny. But yeah, I guess what are you guys, how are you feeling about it so far? Neil, you're not as far. How are you feeling about it compared to like Engage?
Already made three houses.
Yeah.
It's kind of complicated in the fact that I understand why people that are maybe disappointed in the fact that like this is, I don't even know if I'd say a step back, but like a step to the side of what Three Houses was doing. And I mean, it is something that I think Matt, I saw him retweet this meme of like going through two different pathways of like Engage is good, Engage is bad. And then it just both pathways lead to, we're just going to argue about Three Houses for another 3 years, which is what's going to happen. And I am going to feed into it right now. And I have no regrets because I think it is, I think it is relevant to the texture of the series, because I feel like in a lot of ways, what Fire Emblem Engage is doing would be like if after Breath of the Wild, the next Zelda game was just like following the formula started by Ocarina of Time. Obviously, yeah. I think that Breath of the Wild's overall structure is, I mean, I think I'm looking at you, John, and the fact that I know you're not as hot on Three Houses for the changes that it made to Fire Emblem.
I think it's actively a bad game.
Yeah. But like it is like, and I don't think like that the Zelda comparison here is not one to one, because I think Breath of the Wild is like a very true to the core of what Zelda is. Whereas I think Fire Emblem Three Houses, while not like, you know, the opposite of what Fire Emblem historically has been, definitely veers off in a different persona-y direction. But I do look at this game and it feels like a throwback to older games, whether it's Awakening, whether it's the GBA games, whereas Three Houses did feel like a step in a different direction. And I think I prefer this kind of Fire Emblem game over Engage, though I did have a lot of fun with Three Houses. A lot of my issues with Three Houses are more the fact that I had to replay the first half of the game four times to actually get the full story.
Yeah.
And that just made me mad after I finished the game once and was like, huh, is there an easy way to find out what happened in the other three ones? And the answer was look on Wikipedia and YouTube. But I kind of like that Engage is a straightforward story. Because it does let me just then go around and mess with the characters on this run and not be as precious, but also know that like I'm not gonna have to do all this funky shit to try to like min-max how many people come over to my side throughout the course of the game. But I'm only like 2 or so hours in. I haven't even really experimented with the full breath of the Somnial. I've only adopted 2 animals so far. But the combat feels really good. I like a lot of the changes that they made. The UI is super, super snappy. It just makes battling easy to get into. And I think we kind of talked about it on Twitter a little bit, where you said that like you wish there was a way of like you could automate buying and upgrading weapons and stuff. But I do like that, much like Three Houses does, where you can automate some parts of Three Houses, even if that does not feel like the optimal way to play that game. I like that it's, you're still gonna have to do some work, but like if you just want to like buy a bunch of weapons and then have it optimize to your team's strengths, you could just do that. Like there are ways that there is that kind of like streamlined process, but also if you want to get really nitty-gritty with what everybody does, you can do that as well.
Yeah, I think I just get, the more characters I get, the less ambition I have to maximize each of their loadouts.
Yeah,
because there's just so many of them and I'm using different ones depending on the fight. So like it's not like I can just choose my perfect team. I'm mixing things around, and then when I optimize the weapons, they all get shuffled around to different people. And so it's, yeah. And that's purely a problem of like not wanting to totally invest in this very deep RPG element of the game.
Yeah. The emblem rings are pretty cool. They feel overpowered, but I think that's kind of to a degree, that's the point. But it seems like also from what Matt has said and what I get a feeling this game is going, is that they are aware that they have you have these abilities and will balance the game accordingly. But I like it because it adds another variable and another wrinkle to the game.
I felt that the difficulty takes it into account I'm playing on hard classic, and I am not letting myself use the time crystal. So if I lose a unit, and if I want to maintain my perfect run, then I just have to reset and redo that map. And I find that the battles are really tense. And yes, using the engage is a really powerful mechanic. But once you use it, it takes a long time to get it back. And you're going to find yourself in situations where you wish you had it. And you really have to think through and be creative with the tools that they give you. In fact, in my last battle that I just did, I had two engage rings. One would let me create four adjacent, like, one HP decoys, basically. And another would allow me to protect all four adjacent squares from, if like, it was like a 90% trigger rate of defending them from a fatal blow. And so I was in a really sticky bind where I was surrounded by like 10 enemies and I couldn't kill them all. So I used both of those in tandem. And that play, you know, it is really powerful, but like thinking that creatively is something I enjoy doing in Fire Emblem, and like using, maximizing the tactical tools that I have felt really rewarding. So it's like the game gives you a lot more tools than, let's say, the GBA games, which is a very like pure and simple game. You know, you have the weapon triangle, you have your different weapons and your loadouts and your units, but you don't have like the bells and whistles. But it's really rewarding. Like, this is some of the best tactics gameplay that I've seen from the series. And I rank it really, really highly.
Yeah, I'm a real big fan of the break system that they added for this one, where like when you play into the weapons triangle and use an advantage, you essentially disable an enemy from being able to counterattack for the remainder of that turn. So you can kind of run in with a character who has that advantage that might not be that strong and disable the enemy, and then run in with your other characters that wouldn't have that advantage, and like they'll be safe from counterattacks. And it really adds a new layer of how you approach like prioritizing who does what. It's not always as simple as who can do the most damage. It's sometimes like, who do I need to take the ability to retaliate away from?
Right.
Which is, I think, really interesting.
Yeah, which allows your, let's say, your weaker units to still contribute meaningfully to a fight, and also adds a sense of danger on enemy phase when, like, maybe a weak unit attacked your mage, but then that disables your mage, and now they can't retaliate, and now they could possibly die. So, and also like the different unit types as well. Like the Chi Adept is a really cool idea, because typically your healers don't have a whole lot of health pools. Like really, they're just supposed to be in the back line healing up your units. But the Chi Adept basically allows you to heal, but also to chain guard. And what chain guard does is that you can activate that and protect a unit that's like ahead of them or beside them.
The cardinal directions.
Yes, exactly. And so, I had a Pegasus Knight attack a unit, but then they were in range of an archer, and an archer would have been able to take out my Pegasus Knight basically in one blow. But if I use a Chi Adept to do a chain guard, then I've basically nullified that damage to the Pegasus Knight, and I only take 20% damage to the Chi Adept. So there's a lot of tools, and there's a lot of deep systems that, I mean, it's so much fun.
But it's not too, it's pretty accessible. Like
it communicates. Like that was
something
well.
Else. Yeah, that was something else about Three Houses. And it wasn't so much the combat in Three Houses as it was like the school class systems and stuff, where it felt like I was sitting through a lot of explanation tutorial things early on. Whereas this feels pretty easy to just hop into. Like there's depth there, but like if you get the basics, you can kind of figure out the rest as you go and you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I agree with your comment that it's the best the actual tactical combat has felt in a long time, if not maybe ever. Like, it's just one of the more satisfying, because that's like Fire Emblem as a tactics game. It's Fire Emblem has always had sort of this weird balance of like it's a tactics game, but it's also a borderline visual novel.
Yeah, this feels like it's leaning more in the tactics direction than it has for a while.
Right, which I love. I do wonder, like, there's probably a portion of the Fire Emblem fan base that hates this. They're also in the weird spot where, like, Fire Emblem Three Houses, like I don't like it, but it sold incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, they probably have
for the series.
Right, like, does a chunk of their fan base, is that the only Fire Emblem they've played, and is that what they want? Like, that's what they got into it for? And so is something like Engage going to be, like, just not at all what their fan base wants now? I don't know.
I've read reviews and I've heard from friends who are also playing, and they're like, they are definitely missing some of the social aspects from Three Houses. And Matt and I have talked about the social aspects of Three Houses, and like, we agree that they're not great. Like, Tea Time is just a bad mini game, and running around the monastery for hours between battles is not satisfying. Like, you might get some good lore, you might get some good characterization, but you're spending so much time away from the core gameplay. And I like Three Houses. I love that game. But I would not disagree that the social aspects definitely dilute the combat, especially because they put such an emphasis on each of those characters, at least the ones that are in the house that you're teaching. And so, like, losing them, having permadeath, doesn't even make much sense, because they want you to invest so much. And Engage, I feel like I could play it with permadeath and be fine. Like, they give you new units pretty constantly, and they all seem to be viable, at least in my first run.
Yeah, and it feels like I don't need to worry about missing units, at least not so far. Like, they just pop up, like, there's a paralogue. There's probably a unit there you could go get if you go talk to them. Like, I don't feel like I need to worry about, like, maximum, like, am I doing this exactly right to get all of the units I can possibly get? It's just sort of like, I'm going through the levels, and if I want to go get this other character, they're over here, and I can just go get them.
Yep.
Which I like. I will also say something that I think is kind of funny. Running around the Somnial, I noticed that, like, from an artistic standpoint and a technical standpoint, this game honestly looks very similar to Pokemon Scarlet and Violet as far as what its assets look like.
Yeah.
The difference is that it has anti-aliasing and, like, really nice pre-baked light maps that give you at least the impression of ambient occlusion. And it's like, huh, like, this still isn't gorgeous, but, like, this is a pleasant place to exist. As opposed to Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, where you're just like, what's, like, I hate what my eyes are seeing. So I do feel like it sort of also proves that point of, like, and they're not even using nice anti-aliasing. It's literally the anti-aliasing that I said that Scarlet and Violet should use, which is just like a FXAA, which is like a post-process anti-aliasing that costs nothing at an engine level. And it really cleans it up nicely and sure does look pretty and doesn't really cause any artifacts. And yeah, so good job, Fire Emblem. I guess they're recovering from Three Houses, which might have been the most aggressive case of holy crap, please anti-alias this game I have ever seen.
But I think also, isn't Unity, which I think is a first for the series. Mm-hmm. Although maybe
is it?
It's not in the Warriors engine.
Wait, is it really?
Unity.
It's in Unity?
Yep.
Yeah.
Whoa. Why?
I don't know, but I double checked it after Matt told me about how to, like, check for the copyright stuff. And it says Unity.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, John, just a quick tangent. What's the deal with Unity? Why do I hear, like, some people give it a bad rap? Some people say it's totally fine.
It, from talking to people who have worked in it, at one point it was sort of the low-end, easily accessible thing that every indie developer started on. It's not particularly powerful, it's not well-optimized, it doesn't have a very good tool set, but, like, at one point it was extremely accessible, and I believe it was free. It's not anymore, it's trying to be more competitive, and as a result, most developers have sort of stopped, and Unreal Engine has sort of become what Unity used to be. So Unity's advantage is that, in theory, it should be highly portable to everything. In practice, that doesn't actually hold true. And it's a very heavy engine with a lot of tech debt that's been accrued over the years. And it has a reputation. And there are people who have made incredible games with it. I think stuff like Yooka-Laylee, at least the first one, I believe was a Unity game and was ported excellently across multiple platforms. Yeah, so there are plenty of great Unity games, but it's Nintendo using it is bizarre. And I don't know that they ever have before. They've used Unreal Engine. I believe Yoshi's Crafted World was Unreal Engine 4. But I don't think they've ever used Unity before. That is, you've shaken my world by telling me that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like, obviously Three Houses was made by Koei Tecmo and they used the Warriors engine, and that didn't turn out very well for them. And I think, I don't know, Intelligent Systems has probably been looking for a way to make Fire Emblem games for Switch ever since, you know, they stopped making them for 3DS, and Unity is what they landed on.
Huh. I'm sorry. Now I wanted to try to find a list of Unity games to see if Nintendo's ever used it before. Surely Paper Mario and the Origami King was in-house engine. Well, Google just says it's a proprietary engine. So why would they switch to Unity? We need to interview them. Find me an interview contact at Intelligent Systems.
I'm not sure if the Paper Mario people are even allowed to talk to the Fire Emblem people, because those games look wildly different.
If they talk to the Fire Emblem people, they'll accidentally invent new Mario characters. And
I will say, from looking at the developer list for for Engage, there is not people who worked on Origami King, because they were working on this, but there is a few people that I could tell that like had past experience with Paper Mario games, other than like Color Splash and stuff like that.
Oh, hold on. The most popular, highest selling Fire Emblem was made in Unity. Fire Emblem Heroes.
That makes sense. Maybe, yeah. This is just the Heroes engine on steroids. It's like, well, we already got the tactical system built for Heroes, so might as well just use that and Engage.
Yeah, and Intelligent Systems works on Heroes in-house, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, yeah, like the director of Fates. Or no. I think I should have taken better notes about this. I believe one of the main directors of recent games is working on Heroes, or is credited as the director on Heroes. I don't know if it was the guy who led Echoes or Fates, because the director of Engage is a guy who it's his first time directing.
Wow.
They did a good job.
Yeah.
Bang up job.
Knocked it out of the park, bro.
Well, okay.
That's a video game.
Did you guys have anything else you wanted to talk about related to Fire Emblem Engage?
It's a rad ass game.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I think I don't mind the story and its simplicity. I think it gets out of the way for the tactics gameplay to really shine. And honestly, like, because it's a celebration game with all the characters from previous worlds, like, you can't really write a Three Houses style war drama with that premise.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with it. But I would hope that I want to see what they do next tonally, but I want to see these same tactics be implemented somehow, because it's been it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I have one last question. Who's your waifu?
I've been going for who's the yellow archer chick?
Etie,
yeah. Archers are always my favorite characters. And her support quest line is like extremely awkward and uncomfortable every time. Cause it's every single one is just like, she shows up and Alir's just standing there staring at her. And she's like, "Why are you staring at me?" And he's like, "Cause you're so confident." And she's like, "Okay, that's fine." And it's really weird and awkward, and it's great. So yeah, we're going that way.
Alir is a bit of a doof.
He is a doof.
She is a doof.
I did consider, I'm like, I may just need to make Alir canonically gay, because he really seems gay. But no, Archer chick all the way. What about you guys?
My Allier might be canonically gay. No, I like the, I mean, I'm still early enough that I haven't really done any support stuff, but definitely I ETA so far has been my fave, I guess, but a lot of ball game left.
Can I romance what's the old knight's name?
That's Vander.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say the old knight that's just Varys from Shining Force. Can you romance Vander?
I don't see why not.
I should romance. Maybe Allier's into older men. You know what's a weird part of this game? The thing where you can go to sleep and then like listen for someone to walk into your room and wake you up.
I have yet to do that, and I don't really care to.
Oh man, it's strange every time.
Not great.
Like, you just go to sleep, and then like it's just a black screen. It's like someone came in, and then you just hear footsteps and someone like talking while you're asleep, and then they wake you up, and then you're like way too close to them, and it's just I don't know what the mechanic does and why it's there, but it's weird every time.
Yeah. Have you recruited Chloe yet, the Pegasus Knight?
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Her first support with Allier is like, maybe I should set up a bed in your room so that you can get used to me waking, like waking up and seeing
That's
me.
That's weird.
It's like, yep. What?
Yep. Yeah, she's cute, but she's too forward.
Yes.
And my Allier is not into that.
Yeah, you know, she was in the running for a little while, but then that happened. I'm like, I gotta reconsider.
No,
that was
a hard. I was like, cool, I will never raise your support level again. Like, you're staying at C.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she's odd. And then I don't do any supports with like the 5-year-old children because that feels weird.
Well, you can just talk to them, you know.
No, don't talk to children.
They're not like romantic in nature.
Nope, you just don't. As an adult, you just do not talk to the children.
I understand.
Especially
that policy.
Kids. I don't talk to my children.
Yeah, it is weird. I had to pivot because, like, I would just default to Anna as the romance partner, but she's like 7 in this game, so never mind.
Have you done like the ring polishing?
Yeah, that's weird.
I'm glad they were able to bring the face petting, like.
Yeah,
and like make it awkward
because you're rubbing
in a new way,
ring,
but also less gross.
Well, and it's like a little bit of like a there's some innuendo there because like they are the rings, so you're just sort of polishing them,
mm-hmm.
And it's
they thank you for it. They're grateful,
but they like react differently depending on how hard you rub.
Yes,
it's. There must be one person working on all the Fire Emblems that just comes in and is like, all right, time for me to patch in all the mini games. Yeah.
Yeah, whoever creates the side stuff has a sense of humor for sure.
I have hit the point where I have adopted enough cats that I have no other animals out in the field except for cats, which is probably bad because I think I get different items depending on different animals. But like, screw you. I just want a part of the Somnial this is the cat field where all the cats are that you can't pet or interact with in any way, but they're just sort of there.
You can look at them.
You sure can. You can rotate a camera around them.
You could pet Sami, which is kind of a cat dog.
I don't know
thing.
What Sami is, but I gave him sunglasses and a bandana, and now he follows me around the Somnial, and I forget he's there, and I turn around, and it's like, gah!
Yeah, so, little jump scare.
Yeah. Also, game developers, because I ran into this with Sami, my default character name when I don't forget and accidentally just leave my character's name as Allier is Slardy Bartfast. So I'm going to need you to give me enough spaces to write that because Sami, I can only call him like Slart, which is not as good.
Yeah, even Matt had to resort to a Bee Bumble instead of Buck Bumble. Yeah.
I was glad to see that people caught that in his coverage.
Yeah.
That made me happy. Okay. That feels like a good place to end, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Always end on Buck Bumble.
Always end on Buck Bumble. We should do a Buck Bumble game club.
Okay. I played the theme song for a friend, and they were like, I've heard this song before. I have no idea what this game is. And I was like, how much time you got? We can go play Buck Bumble right now.
Right. How much time do you got? Because... The only way to listen to it is, of course, the 10-hour loop. Anything else doesn't really get the theme across.
Buck to the B, the B to the bum, Buck to the B, Bumble.
If you would like us to do a game club of Buck Bumble, write in. Let us know what arguably not that great N64 games we should force each other to play. That'd be fun. If you're listening to this somewhere where you can review it, you could do it. What'd you say?
I'm in. Let's do it.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, we'll do Buck Bumble. Perfect.
If I remember, it was pretty good in 2000.
I think I've played it. I think. I don't know. It all blends together. But yeah. I know the name. Yeah, review the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. Email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Yeah, that's all. Okay, bye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.